I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE on a day that had been earmarked as Iraq National Sovereignty Day when 16 years ago the formal handover of security responsibilities from US troops to Iraqi forces took place. The US-UK catastrophe would lead to tens of millions killed, wounded or displaced. And it was a week ago today that Iran first retaliated against US aggression by threatening the existence of a US base in Qatar, which left Middle East nations such as Iraq, Kuwait, Oman and the UAE on high alert. That before Trump extraordinarily lashed out against Israel, forcing Netanyahu to return his warplanes back to base. No such anger over Israel's genocide in Gaza, its bombing of Lebanon and its backing of ISIS in Syria. What will the consequences be for the lies that the USA and Israel tell? And can Trump control forces in his own administration that do not answer to Trump's mandate for peace? Command Chief Master Sergeant Dennis Fritz saw US and Israeli lies firsthand when he was in the Pentagon during the Iraq War. He had warned against that war. He advised the general officers in the Department of Defense, including the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's also the author of the heavily redacted book Deadly Betrayal, The Truth About Why the United States Invaded Iraq. And he joins me now, again, from Waldorf, Maryland. Thank you so much, Command Master Sergeant Fritz. Thank you so much for coming back on the show, because in a sense, your book, Deadly Betrayal, told us about Mossad agents wandering through the Pentagon, something backed up by Colonel Wilkerson, friend of the show, former chief of staff at the State Department. And yet, we heard in the past 10 days, week and a half, Trump publicly criticizing an Israeli leader and telling them to take the planes down. Will the Israel lobby ever forgive him?
No, I think there's a lot of behind the scenes working right now to undermine Trump. I'm sure there are forces, you mentioned those forces, I was glad to hear you say that, that are probably undermining him right now. I got to tell you, Trump is unpredictable. And I always thought he had it in him to go publicly against Bibi Netanyahu and Israel. But I was surprised he did it at that moment. I mean, he even, as you know, is known internationally now, he threw an F-bomb word out there, too, in disgust with not only Iran, but Israel as well. And so I can tell you, yeah, they're very disappointed, but they can't go against him because he's so, you just don't know how he's going to take things. And I wouldn't be surprised if he told Bibi Netanyahu, hey, listen, if you don't back down, I'm going to stop all support from you. So I'm sure that startled them, and they're working behind the scenes with forces around Trump to undermine him.
So when you were in the Pentagon, if Donald Rumsfeld or a U.S. Cabinet member had ever thought to threaten Israel, what would have happened to them?
Well, that wasn't going to happen in that particular administration because of the fact, I must tell you, you know, you heard the term, you know, neocons being thrown around. Well, the Pentagon, I spent half my adult life and military life in the Pentagon. And that was the first time I've seen such a one-sided, I would say, philosophy in the Pentagon. Usually in the Pentagon, what we call apolitical, where we support the administration of the time. But at that particular time, the administration was bringing in what we call all neocons. I mean, they flooded the Pentagon. And so you were not going to hear too much dissension within the Pentagon at the time. So you wasn't going to hear that. They were all in, to include Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, who was the deputy to Rumsfeld, Doug Feith, who I worked under as the number three guy in the Pentagon at the time.
He was the Israeli
spy.
So you
were not going to hear that. Yeah, should have never been confirmed in the Pentagon and nowhere near government again. And, oh, by the way, during the Iraq War, when you mentioned about that and all the lives lost there, Doug Feith was the point man for Bibi Netanyahu. Even though he was the finance minister at the time, he was deeply involved in pushing us to war with Iraq, which is part of what is happening right now. As you know, those of you that have purchased my book will see that what's going on now is just a final conclusion of what they've had planned for decades, starting with Iraq because of the fact they had what we call a regime change policy under the Clinton administration at the time, then Syria, and then finishing up with Iran. So as you know, Saddam was gone, Assad was pushed out of the country, and now as we use 9/11 to come up with the excuse to attack Iraq under the disguise of a war on terror, Bibi Netanyahu used October the 7th to carry out a plan that he's always wanted to do.
Well, so AIPAC, which funds people, we don't know about what's going on in Pete Hegseth's Pentagon right now. Presumably AIPAC, who pay J.D. Vance, pay Rubio, pay Hegseth, big Absolutely. New York Times thing here, America enters war against Iran. Presumably they thought when the United States bombed Iran that somehow this was what the Israelis were going to, they wanted for so long and it was going to happen. It wasn't a secret 1-2 operation in which to then quieten it down and then look good for having ended a 12-day war that you started yourself.
Hey, let me comment on that. What a great statement and comment you just made there. As I stated earlier, you know, we took down Iraq, we took down Syria, all funded and pushed by AIPAC. All those folks you mentioned there, they're bought and paid by AIPAC. You know, as I tell folks, I give you assumptions, opinions, and facts. That's a fact, and we all know that. When, in regards to that, I've been on record for over a year stating that if they try to carry out that final plan against Iran, Iran was going to fight back. Why? Ballistic missiles. If you remember, Obama carried out a plan and a deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, better known as Iran Nuclear Deal. That was one reason why the neocons and some of our far-right warmongers didn't like that deal, because they wanted Iran to get rid of their nuclear weapons. I mean, I'm sorry, they're not nuclear weapons, but their ballistic missiles. And that's their livelihood. That's their lifeline. They were not going to get rid of those ballistic missiles. Why? As we can see now, they fought back. Those ballistic missiles, as we know now, are accurate and very powerful. And this so-called 12-day war that we came to decide that, hey, it's time for peace, it wasn't because of the fact it was strength of whether it be Israel or us. It was the strength of the Iranians and those ballistic missiles. They were destroying a lot of infrastructure in Israel. Now, the only time you saw Bibi Netanyahu come out was when the hospital was bombed, and he came out for sympathy. Oh, look what they did. They bombed our hospital, let alone him forgetting all the hospitals they bombed in Gaza. Yet he wanted the world's sympathy. Now, with that said, they didn't expect, even within Israel, that Iran was going to come back so forceful and powerful. Now, in regards to the U.S. and President Trump saying, hey, we want peace now. The attack that Iran did in Qatar, and even I think we shot one, they shot one in Iraq as well, that was a warning shot for us. As you know, and it's public knowledge, and even Trump has admitted to it, the Iranians warned the U.S. and Qatar that, hey, these bombs were coming. Likewise, as they did in Iraq when they bombed in retaliation for the assassination of Soleimani at the time in Iraq when he was visiting there. That was a warning shot. The reason that all of a sudden peace came about and this, I will call it this ceasefire, was because of the fact we know now how powerful Iran is. Those bases that you mentioned earlier, those countries that are really on alert and concerned, whether it be Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, UAE, we have troops there and they're within reach. Not necessarily the ballistic missiles, they're in reach of just normal rockets that Iranians have and other ballistic missiles that are very close. And he can do a lot of damage, I told him, and the military can do a lot of damage to our troops, the U.S. troops in those countries. And so that's why peace came about. It was not because of the fact, oh, we done what we wanted to do, now we can have peace. No, it was because of the fact of Iran, what they were doing.
Yeah, I think the missile dropped in Iraq was actually a mistake. But then if people have been talking about how clever Mossad agents are to have infiltrated Iran itself, why on earth would Israel not have known that Iran has the capability to perhaps even certainly to destroy the leadership of Israel and to win a war with Israel if Israel doesn't use its nuclear weapons?
Well, let's blame that on Bibi Netanyahu. I think he's willing to take that risk. And also with the hope of dragging us in, that was a big hope. They've always wanted us to fight their wars. Let me just put this on record right now. As tough as Israel talk, they're nothing without the United States of America. We fund everything they do. We provide the weapons and we provide diplomatic cover for them at the United Nations. And so the hope, Bibi Netanyahu does not mind sacrificing others just for his last goal of being the Messiah, as he see himself, of Israel. And so I'm sure they knew of the capabilities of Iran, but at the same time, I don't think that they were had the thought that Iran would carry out this retaliation, because they would probably be afraid that America would join in, which we did. And then Iran showed America, hey, take a look at what we can do. Your troops are within close proximity of our weapons, 40,000 troops at that. Some 40,000, some have said 50,000. And so, you know, I think Iran is really probably the winner of this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go on to that in a second. But having said that, what do you think the conversation goes like when the Iranians say to Qatar and the United States, we're going to bomb Al Udeid airbase? I mean, the United States didn't say, don't bomb the airbase. The Qataris didn't say, don't. I mean, there's no... The idea of strategic deterrence doesn't seem to be in this equation at all. I mean, Israel has nuclear weapons. The Americans have a massive amount of force there, an old battleship, the aircraft carrier they sent, the Nimitz, but quite a lot of troops. It doesn't matter. Iran will still hit them. And Iran telegraphs it beforehand. And presumably the Trump administration says, okay, go ahead, fire at some buildings, empty buildings, and then we will say the war's over.
Well, see, that's where the politics of all this come in. You know, you look at lives are being lost, both civilian and militarily, and then you have these politicians playing the game, the diplomatic game, and so forth. As you stated, the Americans and Israelis, they knew that Iran was going to respond. The politics side of it on Iran is, okay, we don't want to take this any further. So we're going to let you know that to save face, we're all going to retaliate. Now, we're going to give you an opportunity to move your personnel out of there, but we are going to retaliate. Hit for tat, as you've heard. On the Trump side of the House, he accepted that because of the fact, as he's been saying all along, I don't want no war. I'm the peaceful president. I'm the peaceful leader. And if any American troops were killed, then Trump would have no choice but to, once again, tit for tat, to retaliate. And I've got to be quite frank with you. You know, I don't know, but in his heart, I don't think he wants to be known as, you know, a person that took us to war again in the Middle East. And so I think this is his way out, too. And also, Iran, they don't really want a war. They didn't start this thing. Israel started this. The only of the three parties that want war is Israel, primarily Bibi Netanyahu.
Chief Master Sergeant Fritz, I'll stop you there. More from the author of Deadly Betrayal, The Truth About Why the United States Invaded Iraq After the Spring. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with retired Commander Chief Master Sergeant Dennis Fritz. So you were talking, Dennis, about what the politics were that lay behind the events of 10 days ago. And where here we thought a regional war might be in the offing, but actually it was just politics playing out. But it cost hundreds of millions of dollars for all these airlines to move things around, the missiles themselves, these B-2s being flown all around, the nuclear submarines that were used to fire the missiles at Iran. And the result seems to have been, I mean, even J.D. Vance and the IAEA said this, despite Trump's denials, 400 kilos of 60% enriched uranium has gone missing. It's very easy to make nuclear bombs out of that, turning it into 90%. And as Iranians now talking about the fact that they need a nuclear ambiguity. They're going to leave the IAEA, leave the Non-Proliferation Treaty, institutions that Israel doesn't even care about but has nuclear weapons. They're going to copy Israel. Do you think that's where we're at now? Basically, nuclear ambiguity with Iran?
Let me just say this. I've been on record here for the last 6 months saying, and now I'm really on record of saying this, it would be prudent for Iran to develop a nuclear weapon for their security. Israel has nuclear weapons under ambiguity, as you stated earlier. We have nuclear weapons open. Let's just take a look at a couple examples. North Korea, you know, they went underground, no pun intended, and developed their nuclear weapons. Let's look at Libya. They gave up their nuclear weapons program. Look at them now. You know, look where their country is right now. And so I think, personally, it will be prudent for them to develop a nuclear weapon for their security. After all, let's take a look at the United States of America. we have nuclear weapons, but we think we can tell someone else they can't have them. After all, we're the only country in the world to ever use a nuclear or atomic weapon. We, United States of America.
Yeah.
So I think it would be prudent for Iran to have a nuclear weapon, to be quite frank with you, for their security.
And Trump even seemed quite proud about that. Maybe Trump sees that nuclear deterrence theory to be played out, the price of uranium rocketed. But fundamentally, are we now realizing that it's the United States that calls the shots, not Israel? Those that always said the Israeli lobby is running Washington, we now realize that if you have a president that wants to do stuff, I mean, at the time of recording, Donald Trump is still alive, I should just say. Maybe you want to expand on that. But the fact is, the United States has the power to support, have Israel supporting ISIS, Daesh, killing Christians in Syria, bombing that church, the genocide in Gaza. It's the U.S., not Israel. Stop blaming Netanyahu.
Well, you mentioned a good friend of mine earlier, Larry Wilkerson. And that is his take on things, that the U.S. is actually running things. But I have mixed emotions about that. Let's talk about normal, you know, administrations in the United States of America, and let's talk about our Congress. They're absolutely bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby, in particular AIPAC. And, you know, they want that power so bad. Just imagine when you talk about Gaza. Here it is. We see before our eyes all the women and children and men, innocently, that are being killed in Gaza. Yet our administration support that, turns a blind eye to that. How can they do that? Why? Because they're funded and they want to stay in power. Now, Trump, let's take Trump. Trump is a different breed. He don't care. You know, I mean, in some ways, the lobby influenced him. Marianne Allison gave him $100 million, you know, through a PAC for his campaign. But he walks himself with his own drumbeat. And what I mean by that, you can only push him so much. Both him and Bibi Netanyahu have an ego. I don't know which one is the bigger, but Trump has the Trump card, no pun intended. You know, he has the money and the power of the United States to be able to tell Bibi, hey, look, Bibi, you're making me look bad now. I want peace. And I wouldn't be surprised behind, you know, closed doors, he told Bibi, hey, I will stop all that support. Because guess what? Unless he becomes the king, he's on his last 3 years, 3.5 years of being president. And so he doesn't need the Israeli lobby. He can care less about the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. He's his own self. He's a MAGA. And once he leaves office, he can care less. And so I think that's what gives him the extra strength to be able to say, hey, Israel, hey, BB, you're going to listen to me now. I want that Nobel Peace Prize. And so I want peace. Now, as I stated earlier now, keep this in mind. Even under the Bush administration, what I saw with my own eyes in the Pentagon, there are forces around Trump that are going to undermine him. That is the playbook of the neocons. It's written. It's written in stone that if we have to undermine the president of the United States to get what we want and get our objectives, we will do that. And so there will be forces. And as you mentioned, the Secretary of State and Acting National Security Advisor, Rubio, I guarantee you he's working with the neocons and the Israeli lobby to undermine Trump. And there'll be some what we call a false flag, whereas Israel's already put it out there. We will respond harshly if Iran break the ceasefire. And I'm sure there's going to be something happen to draw us back. I don't think this is over yet. I really don't.
Yeah, some members of the MAGA movement warning of the false flag, even suggesting that the USS Nimitz was sent out because it's its last voyage as a sort of decoy in that way. How important is it to for Trump and his close advisors to telegraph to the American people that if something happens, it may well be a false flag? I mean, I know it sounds, you know, it sounds by definition conspiratorial, but we have the historical record to show false flags.
I would just, Rich, are you going to look back at the USS Liberty, who celebrated that about 2 weeks ago, where we had a ship out there, I think it was the Mediterranean, and they tried to use the Egyptians for bombing it, but it's really Israelis that bomb that USS Liberty. So we have historical data that they will perform a false flag. How about, now this I don't know, I can give you an assumption. How about when President Obama said, hey, my red line will be chemical weapons introduced in Syria by the Assad government? Well, guess what? Chemical weapons was introduced. I think that was Israel. There's just assumption and opinion on my part. So I wouldn't be surprised. Now, we openly say that, hey, it was a false flag, I just don't know. Those surrounding Trump probably will not. But if you push Trump too hard and back him up in the corner, I think he would. But we need to be on guard for that. And when you mentioned about the carrier being out there, you know, in my book that's over my shoulders, you mentioned, you know, what got me into this crusade was the lies about the W&D, which the Pentagon and the government, U.S. government, knew that Saddam did not have weapons of mass destruction. Listen to me good. They knew, but they went to war based on lies. 4,500 military, U.S. military men and women were killed, and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were killed based on that lie. Now, if there's a false flag, let's say if one of those carriers are hit, there's about 5,000 personnel on those carriers. Listen to what I just said. 4,500 military people lost their lives in the Iraq war, including, I'll never forget, the Iraqis that lost their lives. But there's not enough little small boats to rescue all the sailors and Marines off those carriers. And so Trump will be forced. The force will be so much against him, what's a false flag or not, to retaliate, because you can lose at one time up to 5,000 personnel on a carrier if a ballistic missile hit it.
Well, that's really disturbing. I mean, the book Deadly Betrayal was clearly written by you, heavily redacted by the Pentagon, as I said, to alert the American people to the existence of Mossad and so on in your body politic. I don't know whether you saw Tucker Carlson, who actually said on his show recently that Rupert Murdoch wanted him to run against Trump and would have given him the Wall Street Journal and Fox News, etc., to back a Tucker Carlson presidency. But he interviewed Ted Cruz, and it seemed Ted Cruz, a longtime senator, didn't care if Mossad was spying on the president of the United States or senators or congressmen. Did that surprise you, that actually they don't mind it? It's as if they want Mossad in the Congress.
Not at all. They have no shame. In fact, Cruz actually said during that interview, I look forward to joining the Senate so I can be the biggest supporter of Israel. Not his people in Texas, not the United States, but he literally said, so I can support, be the best supporter of Israel. Listen, we have a young lady, I don't know if you ever interviewed, but Medea Benjamin of Cold Pink. She's always on the Hill challenging those members of Congress. They treat her like she's a piece of dirt. And she's the rightful person in this. That's how much these people in Congress, listen, I have no respect for 99% of our Congress. They're low-down, dirty bombs. And I'm on record saying about my United States of America Congress. Because how can, first of all, let's forget about Iraq for a moment. Let's forget about Iran for a moment. Look what we are doing to Gaza. We are complicit. As I tell the people when I'm giving presentations here in the United States, I tell them, if you don't say anything, you are complicit, because our government is representing us and supporting Israel in what they're doing to the people of Gaza and the Palestinians as a whole in that genocide. So just take a look at that for a moment. Cruz or anybody else, how we can allow that to happen in our name. That is low down dirty. So Cruz, I don't want to curse. I don't want to throw an F-bomb like the president did, but that's how I feel about Cruz.
What?
And let me just say this. My politics, can I just mention this? My politics are not the same as Tucker. But right now, Tucker is my hero, and I would join forces with Tucker in this call. But it's not about domestic politics in the United States. This is about the world right now. I would join Tucker Carlson in this cause, and our politics are totally different.
Yeah, who clearly has a tempestuous relationship with Trump. They're on phone call terms, but then Trump famously criticized him and kooky for not agreeing with the strike on Iran. What power does China, Russia, and, I mean, is it like China, Russia, the international community, not NATO, with Trump against this Mossad rump in Congress then? Is that what's going on? And Netanyahu is more popular now in Israel for the genocide, for what's happened as regards Iran, for some reason, even though there's been massive bombing, of course, of Tel Aviv and parts of Israel. How can Russia and China impact? Did they impact on things as regards the latest skirmish? Because, of course, the Iranian foreign minister, Agachi, went straight to Moscow.
Well, let me share something with you. Early on, I was surprised that Russia was not more of a vocal supporter of Iran. But then when I saw, and you probably saw it, open sources and press release by Putin, you know, he stated, hey, listen, we're willing to help them, but Iran has said they don't want our support right now. You know, that's nothing we must forget. Even Hezbollah, everybody think Hezbollah is dead. They still have a huge capability, and Iran can still call on them. But Iran wanted to show, hey, we can fend for ourselves for right now, and we're going to show you what we have. In regards to China, it is not a security situation for them, but it's an economic situation for them. So I think they will support Iran. And I would tell you also, I think they will come to the support of Iran just to keep them from closing the Strait of Hormuz because of the fact China gets their oil from Iran. And so I think that would be really critical for them.
Although there are other pipelines for that. We're just coming to an end now. Isn't the point then that rather than the Zionist lobby, it's actually the financial lobby? Trump will not countenance the closing of the Straits of Hormuz because he sees that as the destruction of the working classes of the United States that he famously talked about in his inauguration speech in his first term, the American carnage.
Absolutely.
The Straits of Hormuz have to be open.
That scares them because a lower parliament in the government of Iran voted to actually close it. Now, that wasn't a security vote in Iran that said that, but they voted. And so I'm sure they got Trump's attention as well to quickly say, hey, let's have peace right now, you know, because, in fact, economically, you know, he's a business guy. You know, in his mind, he thinks everything's about business. So I think you're absolutely right in that regard.
Dennis Fritz, thank you.
Thanks for having me again. Look forward to coming again.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK-EU on bombing of Gaza and Iran. We'll be back on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.